D. James Kennedy Ministries presents Truths That Transform.
In recent decades, the idea of the so-called separation of church and state has been taken grossly out of context. Find out about this dangerous agenda that is seeking to strip your freedoms to freely exercise your religion on today's Truths That Transform. Welcome to Truths That Transform, a production of D. James Kennedy Ministries, where we are standing for truth and defending your freedom. America's founders strongly believed that there should be no national church denomination as they had experienced in England. They codified this belief in the First Amendment, keeping the federal government out of the affairs of the church and of its members. But in recent decades, this idea has been twisted into the so-called separation of church and state, a phrase that appears nowhere in the Constitution. On today's program, you will see how this damaging agenda was put in place, and you will meet a man who found himself at the center of the movement to remove all vestiges of religion from your schools. You will also discover the damaging effects of this persuasive new secularism. As we begin, Dr. Daniel Dreisbach of American University is one of the premier historians on the Founding Fathers and how their intent has been twisted in the courts. I recently had a chance to talk with him in Washington, D.C. In 1947, the American jurisprudence, which had stood for the prior 158 years, if we want to go back to the ratification of the Constitution, and a new kind of lexicon entered our public discourse, the idea of separation of church and state based on a metaphor by Thomas Jefferson in his letter to the Danbury Baptist. Tell us about that. What was the intent, Jefferson's intent? You wrote a very memorable book on that, The Wall of Separation, on that subject. Tell us about the intent that Jefferson had, and tell us about the abuses we've seen from 1947 and going forward.
Yes. Well, on New Year's Day, 1802, Thomas Jefferson wrote a letter. He's the nation's chief executive. He's president of the United States. He wrote a letter to a Baptist congregation in New England in which he used this memorable phrase, this pithy metaphor of a wall of separation between church and state. Now, what I would argue and what I argue in my book is that Jefferson's wall, if you look at it in its context, the context of the letter itself, the political context in which he writes this letter, is not a wall erected between church and state. Rather, he was affirming a wall between the national government and state and local governments and religious societies on the other side of the wall. He was affirming, in other words, this principle of federalism. Federalism is a political system that separates power between a central authority and regional authorities. And it's very important in our system of government that we understand at what level certain responsibilities are delegated. And what Jefferson, I believe, was saying in his letter, in which he uses this metaphor, is that matters of religious practice, religious affiliations, is something best left first to the individual, it's left to the religious society, and then to state and local governments. It's not a matter of the federal government.
Jefferson offered a fairly straightforward interpretation, and he gave a helpful metaphor. The wall was not an unhelpful metaphor, but it's been wrongly interpreted and wrongly applied. Give us some examples of some of the abuses we've seen.
Well, let's remind ourselves what a metaphor is. A metaphor is a comparison of two things that are not strictly identical. And we hope to gain some insights on the object through that comparison. But always built into a metaphor is the possibility of distortion. Because again, there's There's dissimilarity between the object and the metaphor. And I think that's one of the problems here with the wall of separation. And herein lies the problem. The First Amendment, in its own language, says this: Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Now, if we take that language on its face, it is imposing the restrictions on Congress.
And Congress alone.
Congress explicitly. Now, we can say, well, by extension, we're talking here about the federal government, but it's explicitly a restriction on Congress.
Right.
But herein lies the problem. If you replace the literal language of the First Amendment with a wall of separation, which is what the court has done, a wall is a bilateral barrier. By that I mean, if you have a wall, it is as hard to get from this side to that side as it is to get from that side to this side. And the nature of a wall is to put restrictions on
both sides.
And so we go from a First Amendment, which is a restriction on Congress only, to now being a restriction on the church and people of faith and faith-based ideas. And that transforms our understanding of the First Amendment. That extends the prohibition of the First Amendment beyond the literal text of the Constitution. Now, I would say it's actually worse than that. Because if you create a wall, someone has to be the arbiter of where that wall is and has to tell us where the wall has been breached or not breached. And who has fulfilled that function in our society today? It is the federal judiciary. And so we've gone from an arrangement that put the restriction on Congress only to now empowering the federal judiciary to tell the church what they can and cannot do without violating that wall of separation. And so that's a fundamental transformation, I believe, of the historic and literal understanding of the First Amendment. And the implications of that are profound. And that, I think, undermines the freedom and the liberty of people of faith to articulate their views, to share their views in the open and public marketplace of ideas. And that's why I think this language of a wall of separation should excite our interest, why we should be concerned about how that metaphoric language is used.
As you just heard from Daniel Dreisbach, the First Amendment has virtually been turned on its head. What was meant to protect the church from government interference is now being used to protect the government from Christian influence, while the government routinely interferes in all sorts of ways with the free exercise of religion. This is not an accident. It is part of an agenda, as Dr. D. James Kennedy shares in this portion of his message, Church and State.
One of the issues which most troubles and perplexes the national life today is the issue of church and state. All manner of opinions have been set forth. What indeed is to be the relationship of church and state in this country? We are all aware of the fact that the First Amendment declares that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Now, what exactly does that mean? Today, we have been moving in a direction which attempts to say that that means that religion is to have no part in the national life of this country. Now, it is vitally important for us to realize that the very foundation of America was built upon the concept that we had been created by God and given by God certain inalienable rights, and that governments were instituted merely to protect those rights which came from God. Now, if we get rid of the concept of inalienable rights given by God, then we lose the very foundation of our liberties which were established in the Declaration. And that is why that the evolutionary teaching of our time is so dangerous to the basic liberties that we enjoy. Do you not see that if man has not been created by God, if rather he merely evolved, by some concatenation of amino acids and molecules in an ancient sea, then he has no inalienable rights. The only rights which he has are those rights which government may see fit to grant unto him, and those rights which are granted by government may be withdrawn at their pleasure. And that is precisely the situation that exists in every atheistic, communistic nation in the world today. My friends, without a belief in a creator, there are no absolute and inalienable rights. In 1929, the communists issued a protocol. And in that protocol, which described various ways in which they were to bring about the destruction of America, they said that the concept of separation of church and state should be pushed to the extremist position, that all religion should be removed as the underpinning for government of this nation, in order that eventually, having grown weak and flabby and convictionless and fearful, this government might fall. Indeed, we have come a long way along that path. And there are organizations today of atheists and other unbelievers and separatists who would try to do exactly what the communists ordered in that protocol, to get rid of every vestige of religion, to push the idea of the separation of church and state, which, of course, is not found in the Constitution. That was taken from a private letter written by Thomas Jefferson to the Danbury Baptists in 1802, which was 11 years after the First Amendment was passed. And it does not represent accurately what the First Amendment says. And therefore, they want to push this to the extreme position and get rid of all of the Christian and religious foundations of this country. I am sure that if the people for the American way, so-called, were the ones who were founding this country today, that not one single such sentiment as all of these dozens or scores that I have mentioned to you today would be found in our national heritage. And yet these people do not, let me say it again, do not represent the American way. They represent a total departure from the historic American way, clearly indicated by all of the documents and evenly officially stated by the Supreme Court of this land. We can no longer allow such movements as these to reduce this godly nation to a secularist, atheistic, humanistic state where ultimate freedoms and rights are reduced to nothing more than the whim of the government to either grant or to withdraw. God grant that we have not become so weak, so vacillating, and so fearful that we do not have the courage to take a stand for God and this nation's freedoms, and our religious liberty, and the truth. God grant us the courage to take a stand while we still have a place to stand.
In his message, Dr. Kennedy noted the communist imperative to press for the so-called separation of church and state in America. They knew that a secularized America was a weakened America. One atheist was at the center of the legal campaign to strip prayer from public schools. She filed a famous lawsuit on behalf of her son, who is now a Christian and disavows his mother's Marxist motivations. Dr. Jerry Newcomb has more.
I was raised as a red diaper baby. Those are the children that were born into Marxist homes. My mother was Madeline Murray O'Hare. People know her as being an atheist. But the reality is that at her core, she was a Marxist, a utopianist, and a unique brand of kind of magic thought that comes out of that about how all the world's ills can be fixed by having the right people in charge and having a centrally planned society. And as a result of that, she attempted to defect to the Soviet Union in 1960. That failed, but that led to the removal of prayer and Bible reading from the schools, because it was in after that failed attempt that, putting me back in school, she discovered the prayer.
Oh, don't tell me that's the Lord's Prayer.
And the glory.
What the going on in here?
Excuse me?
A recent movie on Netflix about Madeline Murray O'Hare, the most hated woman in America, arguably holds her up as a heroine.
In the Constitution, there is something called the First Amendment. The school board cannot force my son to pray or anyone else.
So sue them.
Washington, D.C., the U.S. Supreme Court declared prayer in school unconstitutional.
This is about religious freedom.
In the movie, and in the minds of some, she's portrayed as some sort of champion of the Constitution. Her own son, in whose name the lawsuit was brought in the first place, knows the real story.
My mother had difficulty holding down a job, and I think that led to some degree her socialism. She thought that having a job should be a right, that somebody should give her a job because of her superior intellect and education, and that should be it. But she had a personality type that caused her to be fired every 30 days.
But fighting school prayer turned out to be a financial bonanza for her through direct mail appeals, and it also made her infamous in many circles.
Here comes the hate mail.
Madeline Murray opened the doors of her new American Atheist Center to much protest.
The most hated woman in America.
The nation's most famous atheist.
People know her for the prayer. They don't know that she also wanted the Pledge of Allegiance out of the school. She doesn't know that she wanted the education about the forefathers out of the school, or that she wanted the Constitution gotten rid of. Nobody knows about those. They just know her for what she eventually became famous for, which was her atheism, which, by the way, provided her a good living. She did not let go of that Marxism until she started to make money off of the free enterprise system of selling her magazines and books.
And what was the impact of school prayer being removed? We once posed that question to William J. Murray in the mid-1990s, some 30 years after the school prayer case.
I would like people to take a look at the Baltimore public schools today versus what they were when I went to those schools in 1963 and my mother took prayer out of the schools. We didn't have armed guards in the hallways then when we had God in the classroom, but I'll guarantee you there are armed guards. In fact, the city school system of Baltimore now has its own armed police force.
From age 18 through 30, William J. Murray distanced himself from his mother, but returned to help out at the Atheist Society at his mother's request. By then, the group was floundering. Returning to that environment conjured up a lot of bad memories for him.
It was getting out of the secular business world and getting re-involved with that atheist movement, quote unquote, and being exposed to the violence again and the dishes flying through the air. That led me to say, hey, this is idiotic. This doesn't work. There has to be something better.
And he found the first hint of something better when he read a novel by Taylor Caldwell, Dear and Glorious Physician, based loosely on the life of St. Luke.
And my first exposure to the gospel was in that book, which caused me one night in the middle of the night to say, I've got to check this out, and to go out and get a Bible and turn to the Gospel of Luke, and to read the Gospel of Luke, and to read the other Gospels, and from there to determine and to understand exactly who Jesus Christ was. It was at that time that I turned my will and my life over to Christ. Well, my life was changed as a result of my salvation. The meanness, the self-centeredness, the sorrow, the violence was removed from my life.
William J. Murray went on from there to write the influential book, My Life Without God. He also works tirelessly to spread the gospel and to fight for religious freedom worldwide. Amazingly, it is likely that his Christian conversion not only saved his soul, but perhaps even his very life, in light of what eventually happened to his mother, half-brother, and daughter.
Don't you know who I am?
Hello, Madeline. What we want? $1 million.
My organization is a non-profit.
We both know that there are a few offshore accounts.
Madeline Murray O'Hare hired some bodyguards who were convicts, thinking that these ex-criminals would cause people to be afraid of her and fear her, so to speak.
She would get these people to work for her because they would work cheap.
Well, these convicts ended up taking the mother and Bill Murray's half-brother and daughter around to the ATMs. They drained their bank accounts, and then they killed them and chopped them up and buried them in barrels. And Bill Murray had Dick Armey get the FBI involved to do research, and they did DNA samples, and they found the bodies. And Bill Murray said if he had not become born again and had not left association with his mother, that very possibly he could have been also killed along with them.
The key of my escaping atheism was the atheism itself. It does not work. It does not function in life. And anyone that says they are an atheist and that they're perfectly normal and living a normal life, if they are, they're, as Francis Schaeffer said, they are moral parasites. They are living on the moral mainstream that Christianity laid down for them to ride upon. But often that does not work very long, and it sure did not work very long for me.
George Washington said that religion and morality are indispensable supports for our political prosperity. But for more than 70 years, the political left has led a concerted effort to undermine those supports and to banish Christianity from public life altogether. Madeline Murray O'Hare was one of the most well-known, but there have been many others. With the help of the courts, they have been far too successful in suppressing Christianity. But if we understand the true nature of our freedom and the intent of the framers of the Constitution, they won't be able to get away with it anymore. That's why we want to share two important resources with you. Here's my very good friend, Jennifer Kennedy Cassidy, with more. Jennifer, welcome.
Thank you, Frank. Our founders never intended for us to live in a secular society. And as my father, Dr. D. James Kennedy, explained earlier in this program, the removal of religion was intended to subvert our nation. They've only gotten away with it because too few people know the truth. That's why we want to send you the book, The Truth About the Separation of Church and State, featuring four key messages from my father as our thanks for your generous donation. You heard just a portion of his message, Church and State, and this book includes the complete version, plus What Price Liberty, Dawn's Early Light, and The Real Thomas Jefferson. For a generous donation, we'll send you this book, and we'll also include a handy Fast Facts card on the separation of church and state, featuring key points on this issue, which you can keep in your Bible or on your reading table. Simply write to us at D. James Kennedy Ministries, Box 11154, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33339. Or call toll-free, 877-962-7677. Or go online to djkm.org. America's founders gave us the First Amendment because they wanted to protect religion. The modern left has used it to suppress and marginalize Christianity. And the effects are all around us, from school shootings to a nearly 50% illegitimacy rate. America has lost her moral bearings, and our children and grandchildren are paying the price. We must counter the lies with the truth and work to call our public institutions back to their Christian roots. Please consider giving a generous donation to the ongoing work of this ministry as we stand for truth and defend your freedom. As our thanks, we'll send you the Kennedy Collection gift-size hardcover book, The Truth About Separation of Church and State, featuring my dad's powerful teaching, as well as the handy Fast Facts card on the separation of church and state, which features all the basic information you need to know on this issue. simply write to us at D. James Kennedy Ministries, Box 11154, Fort Lauderdale, Florida 33339. Or call toll-free 877-962-7677. Or go online to djkm.org.
If you needed a reminder that elections do indeed matter, new Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch recently heard his first cases on the High Court. Among them was a key church and state case that shows just how ridiculous our nation's strident secularism has become. In the Trinity Lutheran case, a Christian school was excluded from a state program that offered grants to outfit playgrounds with a softer play surface, one designed to prevent injury. What was the reason for this exclusion? It was simply because Trinity Lutheran is a Christian school. This was based on a provision in the Missouri State Constitution prohibiting using public funds to aid a religious institution. The state constitutional amendments, known as Blaine Amendments, were popular in the 1800s and were used as a tool of anti-Catholic bigotry to discriminate against parochial schools. The state of Missouri is now using it to deny one school a program that hundreds of other schools have access to, solely because of its Christian beliefs. The Supreme Court agreed to hear the case in 2016, but it was delayed by the death of Justice Antonin Scalia. Some court watchers believe the court delayed hearing the case because it may have resulted in a 4-4 deadlock. Now, Justice Neil Gorsuch will be one of the justices voting on that case. Justice Gorsuch believes in the original meaning of the First Amendment, and not the twisted version of it used in recent decades to secularize America. This will be one of many cases he could make a crucial difference on, and he is there because many Christians and conservatives saw the Supreme Court vacancy as the most important issue facing the nation in last November's elections. The court will likely rule on this case in June. Elections do indeed matter. D. James Kennedy Ministries is standing for truth and defending your freedom. I'm Frank Wright. Thanks for joining us for Truths That Transform. We'll see you next time.
Next week on Truths That Transform.
I'm very concerned about religious liberties in America.
I believe religious liberty is under threat.
And when those liberties are under attack, we're going to have to stand up and defend those liberties.
That's next week. Today's program is available on DVD for your gift to this ministry of any amount. Please call, write, or log on to our website today. This has been a production of D. James Kennedy Ministries.